Livewire with Jason Moyle.
Hello, my name is Jason Moyle and this is Livewire, and I'm very pleased to say that on Livewire today we have author Howard Priestley. Hello, Howard.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm all right, thank you. Right, we're going to be talking about your brand new book. But before we do that, let's delve a little bit deeper, because tell us a little bit about yourself, because you started off doing art, I believe.
Yeah, well, I still do, actually. And what's interesting with the book is that they've allowed me to paint the cover, and also there are 10 pages of brand new illustrations to go into the book. So that's been quite interesting. But yeah, I mean, I've drawn ever since I was a child, and I did a degree in fine art at Stourbridge in the Midlands, and then developed a career with comic books, trying to write and produce. I did quite a lot of underground style comics, I suppose. I produced a local series of horror comics called Shock Therapy, but then I got a bit disillusioned, because I never seemed to quite get into the mainstream of the comics, because my style wasn't particularly mainstream, I suppose, simple as that. But because of the passion of music and funk, people like George Clinton, Bootsy Collins, the whole, you know, Black American things, which I've been studying in my own time from being 14. So my school days were kind of supplemented by teaching myself alternative history, say. And it led to actually starting to write articles for Soul magazines. And then in the back of one of the magazines, Blues and Soul, they were advertising for cartoonists wanted for a new funk magazine that was coming out of Germany, coming out of Germany, called the New Funk Times. So I submitted my drawings and got a regular cartoon with that. But I suppose, interestingly as well, at the same time, as I left art college, and in the final year, we had to write a thesis. So this is 1979, and I wrote my thesis on Holland Dozier Holland, which got absolutely panned by my tutors, but it was a passion, even back then. And my argument was, it's a form of art, and why not? You know, you've taught us things in the last 3 years that I wasn't particularly familiar with. I'm giving you something to read, which you're not familiar with, but they didn't take that as a as a positive. But so there's always been a kind of a parallel interest in art and in music, so things started to come together a little bit in some of the projects I was working on.
Okay, because you, as you said, you wrote for several magazines, didn't you? Blues and Soul, Soul Express, and the Mojo magazine as well. So, but tell us about your passion for Holland Dozier Holland then, because they were the writers for Motown. So, were you really into Motown music?
I grew up I'm 65, so I'm an old man in a sense, but Motown, I just missed the kind of golden age at the beginning. But what I did start to collect, when I was 14, so that was like 1970, that's when I really started to collect soul music. And Motown, Stax Records, those were the doors in. But because I was collecting blues and soul at the time as well, I was learning about these other artists and these other things that were coming out. And I would tune into either Radio Luxembourg, or there was another station called AFN, which was out of Germany, excuse me, and it stood for American Forces Network. And there was a DJ who was a soldier there called Milt Kemp. And he would play a lot of imports, things that you wouldn't hear on, say, Radio 1. And a lot of the interesting ones seemed to be coming from Detroit. And this was the point where people like Chairman of the Board were releasing, you know, classics like Give Me Just a Little More Time. Frida Payne was releasing Band of Gold, which went to number one. And there was a stunning track. And then there seemed to be a connection with these three guys, Holland Dozier Holland. And then I started to look back at the Motown kind of songbook and the fact that some of the most famous, some of the most popular songs came from them. So there was like Martha Reeves and the Vandellas, Jimmy Mac, Baby Love, the Supremes, Reach Out, I'll Be There, The Four Tops, This Old Heart of Mine, The Isley Brothers. They're the classics. What was interesting was the names on the labels of Frida Payne, Chairman of the Board, belonged to other people. And this was a bit of a mystery, and I couldn't understand it. But I found out that they owned these labels. There were the Invictus label and then the Hot Wax label, and later a label called Music Merchant. And then I started to want to know more about why, what happened, why they left Motown. And because of the interesting black history, I was interested in the riots that took place in the 60s. And it was like there was a story which was, like I said, partly covered in the thesis, but it was this connection between Motown and then Holland Dozier Holland leaving Motown, creating their own label, but also Detroit as a music city. But what happened with the riots of 1967 and how Berry Gordy was the owner of Motown, was looking to leave Motown to go to Los Angeles to pursue a new career in movies. And it was how the city was kind of left. It was abandoned after the riots, and industry was collapsed, and then the music industry was falling apart because Berry Gordy, as a supposedly the kingpin of Detroit, was leaving it. And all these elements, to me, there was something to learn about all this and to understand. So the story just kept going and going and getting bigger and more mysteries. The guys that were the names on these labels were actually Holland Dozier Holland, but they were still contracted to Berry Gordy, so they couldn't write for their own label. So they had to write under other people's names. So it began to become a fascinating history. Then it was like a period in time where it was just before disco kind of hit the clubs and actually took away a lot of the personalities, say, of what was at that point you'd get a recognized Detroit sound, you'd get a recognized Philadelphia soul sound, you'd get a recognized Memphis sound, and then suddenly disco hit everything and everything had to sound like a disco beat. So it was also a point where soul, in a sense, began to change. So all that is in the book.
Okay, and because obviously that was from your thesis in 1979 originally, and you had a phone call about 3 years ago when you were working in your office from John Terry, who resided in the United States and was inquiring about this as well. And you had written a book called Love Factory, so this was from your thesis, mm-hmm. wasn't it? So tell us about how the thesis came a book.
Right, okay, so basically over the years, elements had been kind of reduced into articles in magazines. So there was another magazine called Music Collector, which I think that was around about the 90s. I sent them a cut-down version of the thesis about the Holland Dozier, Holland Invictus, Hot Wax history. And that got published. And then also, I was told that a lot of the labels were being reissued on CD. So I contacted Sequel, I think it was Castle Communications at the time, and they sent me a list of the tracks that they had on record, to use, to reissue. And when I looked at them, I said, there's a lot more than this. There's a lot that you've got. You've got the chairman of the board things, you've got Frida Payne, but there's a lot more. So they actually let me kind of, I suppose, get more involved and start to write some of the sleeve notes for them. So it was like suddenly all this interest, all this history was being used on CDs. And so I decided that maybe there was enough now to consider turning the thesis into a book. So I submitted it to one or two publishers as an idea. It got rejected. Eventually, I did it as a Kindle book. And it got a good review, but I don't know how many sales, because it's not as easy as people think to self-publish, because you've got to keep up with how many sales are, and you've got to keep checking if you've got any royalties to come in and things. And to be honest, I much prefer to have a physical copy of a book, that you can flick through.
Yeah.
Anyway. Basically, while I was still piecing it together, I came across this Detroit Soul Forum. So I started to contribute to that and include some of my things that I'd found. So because basically, doing the CD sleeves, I was also given phone numbers of members of some of the groups, like Chairman of the Board and stuff. So, which was fantastic, for me. I was being able to get first-hand accounts then from some of the people who had been involved. And a bit later as well, I'd actually got a phone number for the Holland Brothers kind of production company. And I tried to get hold of them and they said, well, they're not really interested, so thank you very much. You know, they're not bothered about a book being done about them. So I was getting all these kind of closed doors, but some doors opening as well. So it was quite an interesting journey, you know. And then I'd mentioned on this Detroit Soul Forum that I was, you know, trying to get this book out, and I kept kind of telling people some of the content and things. So basically, yeah, I'm sat in the office at Phoenix Radio and the phone rings in one afternoon, and I get this guy's voice and he's saying, Detroit, I'm not going to try and do it, but yeah, like a Detroit accent, you know, I kind of speak to Howard Priestley. I said, yeah, that's me. And he just told me his name, but I didn't quite get it because I think at that point I thought somebody was having a joke. Okay. You know, I just thought this is a bit of a hoax.
Yeah.
And then he kind of said, you know, has the book come out? And I went, no. So he was talking about the book and asking about it. And he said, have you ever tried to contact the Holland Brothers? And I said, well, I did do, but they just didn't seem interested. So it's a very, you know, like elusive or blah, blah, blah. And he said, oh, they're my uncles.
Okay.
And then I kind of stopped. And I went, sorry, what's your name again? And he said, Johnny Terry. My father was called Johnny Terry. And then the penny dropped that this was actually not a hoax, because I knew who Johnny Terry was. What I didn't know was that he was married to Carol Holland, who was the sister of the Holland Brothers. And then, and he also, I'll tell you one thing that you may know him for, because I mean, Johnny Terry has a name you may not know, but he was in juvenile prison with James Brown and co-wrote a song. If you've ever seen James Brown, yeah, footage of James Brown on stage, there's always one of the things that he used to collapse on the stage singing this ballad, and then somebody would come on and put a cape over him and lead him off. It's a track called Please, 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 which was co-written by Johnny Terry, who then became a member of the Drifters. But then he wrote and produced a song, it's an instrumental called Sliced Tomatoes by the Just Brothers. And that was used by Fatboy Slim as the backing for Rockefeller Skank.
Okay.
So this guy, yeah, so this is his son who's talking to me. And then after I said that I'd not had the chance to speak to Eddie O'Brien Holland, he said, oh, well, Uncle Eddie's over from LA at the moment. He's here in Detroit. I'll get him to give you a call, which he did. And
brilliant.
2 days later, I got a phone call with Eddie Holland, who is like, if you're a Beatles fan, it's like getting a call from Paul McCartney. You know, it was amazing. You know, so I got an exclusive interview, and really, I've kept in touch with the family since. You know, and over the COVID period, I checked in to see if they were okay, and they said, yeah, and Uncle Eddie's asking how you are as well, how you got. So it was amazing. You know, that this journey had taken me from an art student's thesis to a published book, which, as I say, it's been rejected. When I say rejected, it's been almost there, but the publishers themselves, two guys fell out who had a publishing company who were going to do it. And then another publisher was interested, and they were going to get Lamont Dozier, who was obviously the third part of Holland Dozier Holland. They wanted him to do a foreword for my book. And Lamont Dozier's wife got in touch and said, well, Lamont's doing his own book if you're interested in that. So mine got shelved. And my argument back then was, that's his book, just like the Holland Brothers would write a different story than Lamont Dozier. But they wouldn't have it. And then, so for 40-odd years, this book has been kind of almost there. And then suddenly, somebody who came to Phoenix Radio, who's had a book published themselves on the punk history, suggested me try this new one, which is New Haven Publishing. I sent them a synopsis on the Saturday lunch tea time. I had a response on the next morning, Sunday morning, and by Monday I'd got a contract. So it's amazing, yeah. So suddenly the last 40-odd years have just gone. Forget them.
Yeah. So the book's out now. People can buy it, can they? It's
well, they can buy pre-order it at the moment,
okay,
through places like Smith's online, Waterstones online, etc., Amazon, but the actual physical copy, the paperback copy, is due to be out in the shops July 1st.
It's an amazing story, and especially the fact that you've tried so long to get it done, and just one phone call kind of started the chain reaction of just getting this book done. And if all the false starts you had, and now it's there. How do you feel about it?
I'm not sure yet. I've got one. There's one copy being sent to me, which is so I have one physical copy. Now, interestingly, it's almost like a Northern Soul kind of or a soul story in itself, because there's all these stories about, like, how I don't know if you know, there's a track called "Do I Love You" by Frank Wilson, and it's the rarest of the rare, and only three versions, only three pressings are available, because Berry Gordy, it was a Motown, and Berry Gordy, the story goes that Frank Wilson was a background writer, producer, and Gordy didn't want any of the background people wanting to become stars. So he stopped the pressing of this particular record. Only three got through. Well, what's happened with my book is I've had this paperback copy sent to me, but then the press has been stopped because the publisher noticed a mistake, which was their mistake. They'd actually put it in as the second edition, and it's actually the first edition. So the pressing was stopped. I've got the only copy, which will have the mistake in it now. So I'm just going to tuck that away somewhere.
Definitely.
Just in case. So, it's interesting that you talked about soul with all these rarities because of a slight mistake on the label or whatever. Yeah, so I've got a slight mistake on my book, but it looks good. But I'll be happier once it's there in shops. Because I think, like I said, it's been such a stop-start thing. But I just can't believe it won't happen now because, as I say, you know, it's being pre-ordered. Apparently it's going to be published in England first, and then it's going to be published in America and Australia. So it's going to be worldwide, which is, quite exciting.
So how can people find out more about the author himself then? So are you on social media? Have you got your own website? Can people find out more?
I have a website, which is just www.howardpriestley.co.uk. And Priestley is L-E-Y at the end. Some people miss the E out. So it's howardpriestley.co.uk. So there's all the artwork and things and, people can just see what I'm about and what I do.
That's absolutely amazing. So good luck with the book. It will be out, as you said, pre-ordered now, but out on the 1st of July, we hope. So we're going to finish off, Howard, with a song called Love Factory by Eloise Laws. Can you tell us a bit about that song?
Yeah, well, I mean, I chose that actually as the title of the book because there's certain things about Detroit. You know, there was the motor industry, and people said that Motown was run almost like that conveyor belt, you know, of hits coming off it all the time. So I thought, because a lot of the songs were always about love as well, I just thought Love Factory was the perfect title, perfect song, because it actually refers to, in the title, things like you build love affairs like GM builds cars. Now, to some people, GM will mean absolutely nothing, but it's General Motors, which was one of the big industries. So, and it was like, it's a Holland Dozier Holland song, but obviously it's 10 years after their first hit, which was Come and Get These Memories by Martha and the Vandellas in 1963. So it's interesting that a decade later, they were still bringing out these classics, you know. And I just thought, it was a perfect title and a wonderful, wonderful song.
And the title of your book as well. So thanks very much again, Howard. It's been a great talking to you.
It's been a pleasure.
superdog.